and cloudy and windy on Saturday. Looks like rain arrives. Highs should reach near 50. This is meteorologist Tony Salimo from the WTBQ Weather Center. WTBQ.
Hello and welcome to Marriage Conversation. It is the monthly show that airs here on WTBQ, the first Thursday of each month from 12 to 1 o'clock with Dr. Stephen Frew. Dr. Frew is a marriage coach, he is a therapist, and he's an author of three books. I think two books, third one coming out, With These Rings and From Marginal to Magnificent, both wonderful books. You can go on his website, marriageconversation.com, and find out more about him, order the books, and look at his new book, which is coming out as well. And today, I'm going to welcome Dr. Stephen Frew to his own show today and say hello. How are you today?
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you. It's, I woke up thinking I've got to be the luckiest guy on the planet.
That's nice.
Because I get to be on the air with you, first of all, which I love, and I enjoy your intelligence and your welcoming of this topic, which we both are interested in.
Very much
then
so.
We get to be on the air with Julie Furman, Cupid's coach, who is a delightful woman and a woman full of energy, and our radio guests are really going to enjoy her take on things. And I thought, well, they might ask, why would we have Cupid's Coach, a dating service, on the Marriage Conversation? But I think they're very closely linked.
Mm-hmm.
Then, at the end of the day, tonight, I go to a big formal affair called the California Wedding Day.
Oh.
And it's just gorgeous and well done and well, good food and good decorations, good everything, a lot of people, a lot of vendors, and so it's a wonderful day for what I do.
Wow,
in my life.
Terrific. That sounds wonderful. And that goes in with your new book that is coming out, right?
Heart of a Wedding.
Heart of a Wedding, which will be out soon, I think, right?
Well, I'd like to say so.
I know you're close to finishing it.
I'm on the seventh rewrite.
Okay.
And I've just gotten into a kind of an obsession about it being both artistic and being good information and being brief.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy to do all of that. This is a small, it's intended to be a small book, about 80 pages, that has the essence of Marginal to Magnificent, the ideas about how to build a meaningful marriage by building a meaningful wedding.
Mm-hmm.
It has all those ideas, but I didn't want it to be academic. I wanted it to be lively and poetic and beautiful, and so each time I rewrite it, I go, oh my goodness, I want to change that, and I don't know, I may die rewriting it. But
no, maybe you should just put it off to the side a little bit, and maybe it's just as good as it's ever going to get, and let someone else read it, and maybe give it a little break, and then go back and read it, and let the rest of us enjoy it. You know, your guest today, as you just mentioned, Julie Furman, she has her own business called The Cupid's Coach, she is The Cupid's Coach, and the business is also thecupidscoach.com, and as you said, you know, we talk here every Thursday, the first Thursday of each month, about marriage and marriage conversation. But, you know, there are many people out there who listen to us who want to be married. So, and this is obviously what Julie does. So, you know, we're talking about how great it is to be married, and certainly it's great to date your husband and your wife while you are married. But for those that want to be married, we could also use her tips today.
That's absolutely true.
Okay. Do you want to introduce Julie and bring her on with us? I think she's on the air. Julie, yeah?
I'm here.
Listening to us talk about her.
Steve? Well, Julie is a one in a million kind of woman. She's got tons of energy. She's very, very bright. And she has good, smart, down-to-earth coaching advice for people. So it really is a treat for us, for Shannon and I, to have you coming on the program, Julie. We so appreciate you taking the time to do it. And I was looking at your website the other day, and I got this little piece that you wrote. There's such good stuff on your website, cupidscoach.com, for people who are in our audience who are married. They should go to this website and look, not to find another partner, but to look at how the challenges are posed and how Julie and whoever else writes for this blog, I haven't asked Julie if it's all hers, but how she puts it so that when I'm reading it, I'm thinking about improving my relationship to my honey. And listen to this thing she says here. The challenge for today's single men and women is that our culture has never been more complex. Seniors are re-entering the dating scene. Single millionaire women, perplexed how to find a suitable and satisfying romantic partner. Aspiring husbands and hopeful future fathers engaged in the highly competitive chase for the young, gorgeous, fertile female. Oh, my. It's tough out there. She is the guest that you may call in and ask questions. We're going to ask her questions. She's going to ask us questions. We're going to get involved in a highly interactive hour, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So call your neighbor and tell them to get on the line, because this is going to be a fun show.
Well, our lines are pretty busy already, but certainly we're going to talk with Julie and find out the information that many people need to know about what is a matchmaker. I think that's the one thing that most people want to know. In this day and age, what is a matchmaker? And what is it? Is it matching somebody up on the internet with somebody or in person?
Great question. There are probably 100 different ways to do matchmaking. What we do at Cupid's Coach is quite unique. Anybody can be registered with us, so it's free and it's private. Anybody from New York, Ohio, Canada, anywhere can register at cupidscoach.com. And then we, as the matchmakers, can find them when we're searching for our clients. So we have over 20,000 people registered with us privately. You can't go on the website at cupidscoach.com and cruise through the girls or cruise through the guys. It's not meant to be like internet dating. But we do use our technology to privately inventory everybody. And then when I'm searching for my client, I have a deep, rich pool of either men or women that I can find. So the matchmakers, our matchmaking office is based in California, but my company, Cupid's Coach, was acquired by a national company about a year and a half ago, eLove. Uh-huh. And so between my company and their company and all the technologies that we have with both of them, we can help people throughout the U.S. and Canada. And it's just really, really fun. And we base our matchmaking on compatibility. So, for example, rather than having people just judge each other really quickly as they would on an online dating site, what we're doing is we're choosing our candidates very carefully for our clients based on who the client is, type of person he or she's looking for, who's available to us, and who we think that client has a shot at. So we want to put them on first dates with people that really might just have lasting potential. And so we're looking at compatibility, shared values and passions, and we really want to make intelligent matches.
Wow, that sounds so exciting and so...
Julie, let me just ask you something. I think you just said something that astonished me, because I'm a businessman and I'm a man, and I've been dating, in the past and all of that. Did you say that your service was free?
Well, it's free for anybody to be registered at the cupidscoach.com website. The people we're working actively for are the clients. And to hire us to work proactively for you, it's not free, and we have a variety of different levels of service. It's always a function of how easy or challenging the search will be. I've got a gentleman who's 58 years old, and he really wants to have marriage and family. He wants to make a baby, okay? So he wants me to look in the 30s for him. Well, that's a challenging search, because most of the women who are 35, if I say, well, I got a great guy, he's 58 and he wants to meet you, what do you think they're going to say to me?
Well, so you're saying that for people, that our listeners who know people who are adult singles of any age, they can go to the website and register.
Absolutely.
And that there's no charge for that. But
That's exactly right.
If they engage your services, then there's a charge for that.
Yes, and we won't talk specifically about what the fees are, because it really is all over the board. If it's a super easy search, then we've got all kinds of very reasonable programs. If it's a challenging one, there's a date happening here tonight in Los Angeles. Both of them earn over $1 million a year. They're both super challenging to search for, very selective. We're looking for a needle in a haystack for both of them, and we happen to have found this match, and we're having them meet tonight at a restaurant in Beverly Hills, and hopefully they'll like each other. They won't kill each other. They're both very strong, powerful people. And this woman thinks that, you know, she should be with a guy who earns the same amount of money as she does, and, you know, it's a real challenging thing. We've got so many women who are very, very accomplished, successful. We've never seen so many single women with so much money, and it complicates the dating process.
It does. Can I ask you a question?
You know, there's, a,
Should women, I'm sorry to jump in here, but should women and men be that specific when they look for someone? If you are single and listening to us and want to be married, should you be that specific and really zone into what you want, or should you be a little bit more open and accept what comes along?
It's such a good question, Shannon. Here's what I recommend. Each person who's out there, single, wanting love to happen, wanting relationship, make that big, long list. I don't care if it has 432 things on it, but then I want to know, what are the top three critical criteria?
Uh-huh.
And if the person you're considering meeting or having a second, third, fourth, fifth date with has those critical elements, then absolutely give them a shot. When I started dating, how I got into all this is I went to a dating service myself when I was 29.9 years old, really looking for my guy, wasn't sure I was going to be able to have kids, and I was on a mission to try to find my way into family life. And I had a big, long list, and it was too long, and I had a dating coach that helped me understand that if I was going to expect a man to have all 15 things on my list, I was probably going to end up 43, single, wondering why I never got married, never had a kid. So he gave me some very powerful coaching. He said, Julie, if the guy meets your top three critical criteria, give him a shot. And if, you know, having him be a certain height or certain color hair or certain color eyes or certain type of car isn't on the top three, then just give him a shot. And sure enough, that dating service is where I met Mr. Furman. We've been married for 21 years. And I compromised on my age preferences. He's a little older than I thought my husband would be. I compromised on religion. I didn't expect to marry a guy outside of my religion. But the things that really mattered, and this is why it's so fun to talk about, you know, with people who are focused on marriage coaching, what really mattered to both of us was family.
Mm-hmm.
Having children, raising them well, integrating our lives together all around family. And then a couple of passions that we both shared. We both love playing in the garden together. We love hiking together. We love playing with the dog and having family dinners. So that's what's gotten us through the ups and downs that marriage has. So when I do my matching, I don't care how long that list is, but I'm going to look and I'm going to really work with my client to make sure I know what's most important. And this morning is so perfect because this lady called me this morning and she said, Julie, I think maybe I shouldn't go on this date tonight because I think I'm not going to be right for him and he's not going to be right for me because of blah, blah, blah. Well, the blah, blah, blahs were like items number 6, 7, and 8 on her list, and he has the top three.
Mm-hmm.
So after I hang up with you guys, I'm going to have a coaching call with this lady, and I'm going to say, listen, baby cakes, don't sabotage our work here.
Right.
Give this guy a shot.
I think that is
now,
so crucial,
Julie,
what you're saying. Go ahead, Stephen.
Let me interrupt you here. We do a fair amount of coaching ourselves out here. And in fact, it is an interesting thing. You're talking about criteria that women or men bring and what they're looking for. I run three men's groups out here as well as do a lot of couples coaching and single coaching. But one of the men in the group last night said, when I married my wife 20 years ago, I didn't know what I was doing. I was undeveloped, and I hadn't had any psychotherapy, and I didn't have much information about myself as a man, and I didn't understand what women were about. I had a pretty sick mother, and she, psychologically sick mother. She was confusing to me and put me off the track and so forth. He went on to talk about that for a minute, and then he said, I think if I was choosing a woman today, I wouldn't choose the woman I'm living with, my wife.
Mm.
So I have argued in the book Marginal to Magnificent that we make choices and they never are perfect choices. They can't be. I don't care if you're 20, 40, 60, or 80. Those choices are never going to be perfect. There's always things that you would do differently a year later or 5 years later. So I say that you have to trust a deep intuition that we all carry around. Now, you talk about the top three, and I think that's very, very practical, and I like it. I would say to those same people, look, you got to trust your intuition. You may only have one of the top three, and your intuition says there's something about this guy if I'm Julie Furman. There's something about this guy who's a little older than I wanted him to be, and it's a different religion, and maybe it smacks his lips when he eats, but there's something
How
about
did you
this
know
guy.
That, Stephen? He actually talks with his mouth full all the time, and it's one of those things I just
because
work around.
We all do. No, so there's something about this guy that is right in my gut. Now, I argue with this guy last night. I said, you had an intuition, and you picked her, and she picked you. And yes, it quite possibly is true that if you met today a single people, you wouldn't pick each other. But there is no such thing as a perfect choice. So he says, well, what criteria do you suggest to people who are adults and dating? And I say, I have my criteria. And he said, what are they? And I said, it's not same religion, same age, same hiking in the woods criteria that this guest of mine tomorrow is going to talk about. I know she's going to talk about that, and that's good stuff, but that's not my criteria. He said, what's your criteria? I said, their ability to embrace conflict is one. If they know how to fight fair, and if they're willing to fight fair, that's a very important criteria for me in my marriage.
I love it. Ability to embrace conflict and fight fair. You know, I really appreciate what you're saying about that there's no perfect relationship. You know, we've all lived long enough to know, you know, we've lived in many different homes, we've had married different jobs, we have lived in worked in different office spaces. I don't care what your situation is. If you want to find fault with it, you can find fault with it.
You absolutely can.
And
absolutely
if you want to find
and
the beauty,
you don't have the
and
ability
if you want to turn toward each
to
other through conflict.
Actually know that there is no perfect man out there, a perfect woman out there. There is no perfect relationship out there. Every man is born with an idea of the perfect mate, and every woman is born with the idea of the perfect mate, and they never meet, actually. That life is meant to embrace challenges and to learn, and marriage for me is a learning community. So the first criteria for me is, can they embrace conflict? The second criteria is, are they emotionally intelligent? Do they know the difference between being hostile and being angry? Can they identify sorrow? Can they identify joy? Can they not only identify what they are actually feeling, but can they talk about it honestly and clearly? Because that for me would mean a lot in terms of the promise of the relationship.
Can I jump in here for 1 second? From Julie's point of view, and I hear exactly what Stephen's saying. He's a marriage coach. Certainly, marriage is his life's work. But most people, when they're dating, don't think about those sort of things. Should we think about? I mean, we don't. We look for the good stuff. We're not thinking about fighting and how we are going to fight. We don't think about the problems. We look at the good stuff and want to have fun. Should we incorporate some of that in when we are dating?
Absolutely.
I think so. I'd like to hear. That's what I think.
Yes,
that's a very nice thing to do,
such
Shannon,
a wonderful,
right there. Because I think I'd like to hear
two.
Julie's
I think you two are my favorite radio hosts.
I want to wrestle with her a little bit here.
Yes.
And see if
throughout
she thinks
the process
that's premature.
Of dating, I really
those criteria
like to
that I'm talking.
All right, guys, we got it. We're talking over each other here, so one at a time. Julie, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I really like to see people throughout the process of dating. Working through the little things. I mean, it might be on the first date where he's suggested a particular restaurant and she really hates that type of food. For her to be able to gently offer an alternative without putting him down for making the suggestion that he did, you know, all these little things that happen in the process of dating, it's like a new relationship is like a tiny little bud on the tree, which we have here in California right now. In March 1, we have buds on the trees. And those little things, they can be nipped off and just squashed because communication wasn't delivered responsibly and respectfully. Dating is an opportunity to practice the skills we're going to need when we're in that relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's that well said. You heard that, Stephen?
Yeah, and also to practice and also to discover, wouldn't you say? If the person that you picked isn't willing to or able to learn as your practice, you're probably not going to go very far in that dating.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the differences between men and women and what they're complaining about now in dating and how that relates to marriage and how that's going to show up in their marriages. So you are listening to Marriage Conversation, which happens here the first Thursday of each month with Dr. Stephen Frew and his guest today, Julie Furman, talking about dating. So we will be back here in just a few on WTBQ. Hi, and welcome back to Marriage Conversation. It is the show that happens the first Thursday here of the month from 12 to 1 with Dr. Stephen Frew talking about your marriage and how it affects your life and how to keep your marriage singing and wonderful. Dr. Frew is a marriage coach and the author of a few books, and one coming out with these rings, and From Marginal to Magnificent, talking about your marriage and how to make it sing. And today we're talking about marriage and dating, how we get to marriage, how we can date when we're in a marriage. And Julie Furman is our guest today. She is Cupid's coach, cupidscoach.com. She has recently won the Matchmaker Award at the iDate Conference. She is involved in I'm not sure exactly. Julie's going to have to explain this, what eLove is and Cupid's Coach. You now have 50 locations throughout the United States. So you are no longer just a California girl. You are out there with everyone being a matchmaker, right, Julie?
That's exactly right. I created my company, Cupid's Coach, back in about 12 years ago, really to dignify the love search process for serious-minded single people. And it frustrated me that I wasn't able to really serve people across the country. So about a year and a half ago, my company was acquired by eLove, which has almost 60 locations now around the country and expanding. And it's just really a beautiful partnership. So regardless of where someone lives throughout the country, Canada, even internationally, they should get registered with us so that when we're searching for our clients, and some of them are international, we have a client in Shanghai, we have clients in Canada, then we can find them and we can make those introductions happen. So it's a national company. They can find us directly through cupidscoach.com or they can go to elove.com.
Okay, terrific. It's such a different world of dating, isn't it? We don't meet someone at the local store anymore. I think certainly that can happen, but it's such a different world of dating. And it's so, internet has changed everything. The way we live has changed anything. With all this new dating, what do single women complain about and what do men complain about? What is the most difficult thing for women and men to do in this new dating era?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that's consistently causing people to stub their toes is the way we're using our communication devices. Is this a good time to talk about that?
Yeah, you know what? I also want to ask, I have a question. We're going to leave that for a moment because I have a question from a listener, a local author who's a listener and a friend of WTBQ that wrote in a question this morning on Facebook. Our lines are busy, so it's hard to call in. So I was glad he did this on Facebook. And his question was, he's out there dating. He has a few children. His wife unfortunately passed away. And he's got small children. And his question was, is when, if ever, do you introduce the children to who you are dating?
Yeah, it's an important question, and what I will usually recommend is that people not bring the children in to the dating formula for quite some time. It's a very sensitive situation. Now, I've had some people do some creative things with kids, so it's expensive to get babysitters and all of that. So we've seen some of our clients have done really amazing things. They've created neighborhood and friendship cooperatives where single men and single women who are dating and just want to have a night out, they'll pool, and all the kids will come over to one person's house, and that person will be the babysitter for the night, and then next week she gets to have the evening off, or he does. And when we have those types of really fun environments, we've had people bring their kids, and it's kind of a fun dating environment at the local dog park or, at a picnic in the park where the kids are all running around, but you're very, very careful not to make it look like a dating environment. So there are ways of incorporating children into it so that you don't have to get a babysitter road. And I'm curious if Dr. Frew would agree with that.
Stephen, how do you feel about that? I mean, do you think as a therapist and as a doctor, do you feel that that's good because you don't want, I would assume not to let the kids get attached to who you're dating, especially if you break up with that person and then there's someone else. Is that, would that be the logic behind it?
Yeah, let me just clarify for the audience. I'm not a therapist. I'm a marriage coach, and there's a big difference in my in my, that's why I make it, I'm not being academic here. It's just that a coach is more free to be directive and to problem immediately problem solve and give information that psychotherapy model is a very different model. So I don't work under that model. So if you talk about this issue, I'm pretty much hands on there. I agree with Julie. I think adult people, and I've done a lot of work with adult, a lot of coaching of adult singles, a lot of speaking to adult single groups. So this is a population I really enjoy, and I can see big parallels between the challenges of adult couples, married couples, and adult singles. They're not two different worlds as we might think. There is a big place in marriage for not telling each other about the children and acting as if you're adult singles. And there's a big place because we are adults and individuals, and we need to keep nourishing that as well as nourish our parenting. And in the adult singles world, I think that the primary thing is that you guys get to know each other in a way that's not complicated with the dimensionality of children, whatever age the children are. I think you need to start with that and do a lot of intelligent brainstorming and talking and sharing and exploring, and then gradually bring the children into that if that relationship holds. The other piece of that is a lot of adult singles are pretty insensitive to the needs of their children and forget that, for example, adult man who's divorced who has three children, say, he forgets that his children aren't going to jump up and down and say, oh boy, a new mommy. Oh boy, a new woman in our life. They are loyal beyond all words, and they are loyal to their mother or to their father if it's a woman. So it's a very sensitive issue in coaching to help people really listen to and imagine and see what their children need at the same time they're trying to get what they need in the dating scene.
It's a very fine line there, I hear.
Yeah.
And obviously you would want to be pretty serious about that person before you introduce them at all, so that you would be pretty sure that person is staying and not just a person coming and going, right?
Well, yeah, I talked to a guy, this guy with three children, guy 45 years old, a couple years ago it was, but, you know, he said, well, you know, I wanted my children to know that so-and-so and I were very serious, and it was like the second or third time they dated. And he had a big confrontation with his teenage daughter because he expected his teenage daughter to be all excited about this new woman, and the teenage daughter was not. In fact, she didn't like this new woman, and she didn't want to talk to her and so forth. And I was saying, look, this teenage daughter has wisdom. And she doesn't want somebody jammed down her throat. So she needs to know that you honor the fact that she has a mother living across town. She's very loyal to that mother. She loves that mother as a woman and as a mother. And she is going to need to be to work into this relationship with this new woman who is not going to be her mother, but at the very best can be an adult female friend. She's going to have to work into that at her pace.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So I'd like Julie's comments on that, because I'll bet you face that a lot, Julie.
Yeah, and it occurs to me, this one couple that's dating right now, they did it just right. They both have teenage children, and it's a volatile age. It's so natural for teenage children to be somewhat resistant to the idea of a new person coming in. And one of them's a doctor, one of them's a lawyer, and they both have kids and they're living at home, and it was really difficult for them to find the time to be together. And I really do believe that dating is an opportunity to practice all of the skills we're going to need when we're married. And so
yes.
Flexibility
yes.
is one of them. So one of the secrets that worked really well for them is they would wait until after it was the end of the day and the kids were off in their rooms doing their homework, listening to their music, at the time when the kids really didn't want to be engaging with the parents either, and they'd get on the phone, and they would text each other back and forth, and they'd be on the phone. And it reminded me of the early days when I met my husband. I was traveling a lot, and we really fell in love over the phone. I'd take a big bubble bath, and I'd stretch the phone from the wall over to the bubble bath, and that's where we really fell in love, was talking intimately about life and philosophy. And we weren't face-to-face. And it worked, you know, and so you just need to be creative and be flexible and work around the complications, whatever they are, whether it's distance or kids around, and practice the art of falling in love and appreciating each other, even when circumstances aren't quite ideal.
Julie, can I ask you a question? How many people, or you don't have to give me a figure, but a lot of people that you have matched have gotten married, right?
Yeah.
And when they get married, do they continue that romance, whether through the phone or dating? I mean, how do they keep that up so it's as good as when you put them together as it is when they're married? Do they continue to date each other in their marriage?
Oh, so much so. And I really feel fortunate. You know, the couples that we've gotten together, my husband and I have been counting since 1990, and we've had 1,157 that we know about.
Wow.
Couples walk down the aisle.
Congratulations.
It's really fun. And I'd like to say that every single one of our clients becomes happy in relationship and gets married, and it's not that easy. It doesn't always happen. We can't predict who's going to fly off into relationship and who might be available for a referral 5 years later. So that's why we keep such a big community and we don't ever lose anybody. But yes, these couples report back all the time about how they're still courting each other and they're dating each other and they're really focused on enriching each other's lives. So many of our couples are dating for the second, third, fourth time around. Our average age is mid to late 40s right now. And 20 years ago, the average age was about 10 years younger. So what we're seeing is that the single population is aging, and love, when it's found the second, third, fourth time around, is so sweet and so beautiful to watch. Yes, they are courting each other.
Wow, that's really terrific. Stephen, you want to talk about that, how we date in a marriage and how we can...
Yes, I did. We have this little blog that Julie talked about some of the skills or maybe some of the challenges she talks about with couples. For example, the couple, I remember the example you used, Julie, of the couple who sat at... were out at dinner the first time, and one of them kept taking the text messages and answering them, or texting back her children, or he had his phone on vibrate. And when you talk about that, the use of modern communication and how connected we are, at least with these devices, with technology, I see with a lot of couples that they haven't really addressed this issue. So, for example, there'll be a dinner, two teenagers and the mother and dad at dinner, and the teenage girl will be texting, and the father will blow up and say, I put that damn phone away, or whatever he says. Now, I call that a lack of competency, because they really haven't had family discussions about how they want to deal with this technology that's so pervasive in all of our lives. I could see in your illustrations, Julie, how you talked about that being something that you address and want to help couples address. Turn the cell phone off and take care of your business before you sit down to dinner for the first date. But I also see another thing. I think couples out there can use this technology to enhance their intimacy. In other words, I think, for example, of busy business people, men or women, who they're using the technology to be successful in business, but they're not using the technology to connect with their partner in sexy kind of ways. So I'd like you to take that coaching that you gave on your blog about what not to do and offer some of the married folk out there some advice, some coaching on how you would use texting or email or voice messaging in a relationship to enhance intimate connection.
Great. I just love it. It's very similar to what this the lady who inspired me to write that particular blog, she's got a little issue with, she doesn't like it if she's at dinner with somebody or lunch with somebody and they're constantly checking their phone every time it buzzes or whatever. And I hear this a lot in dating, and people will say, well, that's a red flag for me. And, you know, if he's attached to his cell phone like that, well, he's obviously the wrong man. What I will say is, no, be playful with him. What she did is she sort of, like, swatted the phone with a big playful smile on her face, like, you know, like it was a fly swatter. And she said, well, let's get rid of that thing in a cute little playful way that let the guy know that it was distracting and she wanted his attention. And he put the darn thing away, which was great. But she had the way she did it made him feel empowered as opposed to squashing him. Now, same thing with marriage. You know, you're married to somebody for 20 years and you're sitting across the table and, you know, somebody's checking their phone or whatever. If you can be grown up in your communication, I love that you focus on emotional intelligence. Be clear about what you don't like and have a way of saying it. Learn a way to say it that empowers the person instead of squashes them. And then you can play with it. Like, you know, the texting phenomenon is relatively new in our household. My husband was so averse to it. You know, it's awkward for him, the little numbers on the phone, and he didn't like it. But I got him turned on to it because I started sending him sweet little messages. It could be something like, oh, honey, I'm so bored in this meeting. I can't wait to see you tonight. Or, you know, can we go out to dinner tonight and be just you and me? Something cute like that. And all of a sudden, it gives him this big bolt of just love juice in the middle of the day. So that's
right.
What got him kind of hooked. And then the kids started texting him, and he was getting this wonderful connection through the children, through the texting. And we do Words with Friends, the Scrabble game, which is fantastic. And they'll notice times when there's tension, an argument happened in the family or something, and those little Words with Friends or those little texts that we send will break the ice, and all of a sudden humor will be back in the relationship.
Great. That's really wonderful. I love that. I mean, that is so, you know, I happen to love the technology, and I think texting is great. I think it's great for kids. I think there's a lot of good things in it. But as you say, it really can get in the way. And I can understand on a date or even in a marriage where you're second fiddle to that phone, which is constantly in their hands. And instead of making it the enemy, make it the friend. What wonderful idea.
And I think we can also have boundaries and set really reasonable boundaries. You know, one of the things that we started doing at the dinner table is saying, hey, listen, we love having dinner together, and it's so rare, and it's only 45 minutes. Can we just put our phones aside and just talk like normal people? We'll pretend we're the Waltons. And so it's kind of like an adventure. Ooh, a cell phone-free dinner. Wow.
Stephen, what do you say to those couples that never date once they're married, that just either never get around to it, never think about it, just assume, well, why should we date? We're together all the time. I have dinner with them every night. But what's the big difference? Is there a difference between having a just normal routine family dinner and actually going out for a date?
Yeah, I think what we do, we context this. We see marriage as a learning community. That means that we never arrive at that place where we once thought we would arrive, which would be happily ever after. We don't teach couples that there is a happily ever after or anything like that. That's a Disney creation, and it's useless in marriage. That's the first thing. So then we say, well, what is, if that's the case, Stephen, then what do you think is... So then we go, well, what you picked each other for is to learn about all kinds of things. You picked each other to learn about, for example, your own body. If you have a healthy relationship, you're both learning and you're both exploring. You picked each other to learn about your own spiritual orientation or your own spiritual values or your own spiritual depth. You picked each other to learn about emotion. We, most of us, assume that we know about emotion, but we really know very little about our own. We do very little exploring about our own emotionality, and there's a lot of nuance and subtlety in all of our emotional lives. And so I like to say that, look, it's a learning community, and what you're doing, what dating is about, is learning at one level. And the sexiest thing you can do with your partner, I believe, number one, top of the list, is be curious. Sexiest thing you can do, because if you look around you, anybody who is genuine, if I met Julie today for lunch, and she didn't know me and I didn't know her, and if I was genuinely curious about her, she would really feel, wow, this was really a wonderful meeting. She'd go home to her husband. I met this man, and he was so interesting. Well, mm-hmm. It wasn't that I was so interesting. I was interested.
Mm-hmm.
And
true.
If I'm
if I'm busy being interesting, she's going to go home and say, yeah, well, all he did was talk about himself.
My wife just had
lunch with a doctor who refers a lot of clients to her, an internist in town. Just this last week, she had never met him personally, but she'd been on the phone with him. So they had lunch together, a couple-hour lunch, and that's what she said to me when she came home. I said, how'd the lunch go? She said, you know, he was so interested in what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, this guy is really, really bright.
And we have lost that in our partners a lot, haven't
yeah.
we? I mean, and you know, Julie, you obviously, when they're dating, they're very interested in each other for a lot of different reasons, how it'll affect their life. They're curious about the person. But as Dr. Fru says, and it's so true, as we go on, we are less and less interested in the other person, how they feel, where they're going, what they're doing, what they're thinking, their projects in life, right? I mean, so it's a great point. We all want somebody to be interested in us.
That's right. And complacency is the kiss of death in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up to each of us to realize that happiness does not come from out there. It comes from inside. What I find interesting is that women often complain to me that they think men have commitment problems, that men are commitment phobes.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, two-thirds of the divorces in this country are initiated not by men, but by women. And what I see is, second marriages have a failure rate greater than first marriages. Third marriages
yes.
fail even more than second marriages. So what I'm learning
yep.
is that changing horses in the middle of the stream is not necessarily the solution. And so whenever I encounter a married couple who's having trouble, I will always encourage them, go to the workshops, go do your reading together, go to a great marriage coach or counselor or therapist and work through it together, because you're going to have the same challenges that are going to follow you around. And if you are unhappy, the source of your unhappiness is probably not your circumstances as much as it is your perspective.
Well said. Very well said. You know, I read something, Dr. Fru, and you probably know the study. There was a study a few years ago that said once followed different people, those who got divorced in midstream of their life, and then 20 years later, those who stayed together. So those who got divorced 10 years into the marriage, and those at 20 years who had stayed together. And those who had gotten divorced were less happy 20 years later than those who had stayed together and worked it out.
Well, they didn't realize what
yeah.
they got together for in the first place. You got together in the first place to learn. You think you got together because her lips are pretty and she listens to your stories, and you got a great hormone cocktail going, and all of that's wonderful. But really what you get together for is partnering with another human being who has their feet on the ground, who is really genuinely interested in you, and who you can really be genuinely interested in, and then you have a wonderful learning community. And each challenge, for me, that's why I called divorce, Julia, in my book, I called divorce an abortion of a promise.
Wow.
Because I think that what happens is couples decide to stop learning.
Yeah.
And then they can say to the attorneys or to whoever, well, John's just not interested anymore, or I'm so worn out and tired. But they're worn out and tired because they don't know how to grow and they don't know how to learn. And if somebody helps them know how to learn and how to grow, they can find all kinds of possibilities within that relationship that will open it. I see it every day. That will open it to new forms, new connections, in new ways of intimately connecting with each other. So I'm not a pessimist at all, and I'm an old guy, and I'm not a pessimist at all. I'm very positive. If a couple says, you know, we really want to figure out how to do this, they can do it.
That's so true. I'm so excited to have this chance to be on the show. It just really warms my heart. My husband and I went through some really challenging times in 20 years. I think it's normal, it's natural for people to go through rapid waters. And we did a weekend workshop with Alison Armstrong called the Partnership Weekend, and it saved our marriage. We were in the darkest days of our marriage, and it turned all around. And my husband was not the kind of guy who wants to go sit in a weekend seminar. I mean, he did it because I begged him to do it, and I said, I want to do this for us. And we spent the weekend reworking and renegotiating our relationship, and it's stronger today than it ever has been.
You know, that's really terrific, because I think most men are not that kind of guy. It's true. I mean, I don't know one woman that has said this to her husband where he jumps up and goes, yes, I want to do this. But but on the other side, they want to keep the marriage. So you have to work at it to keep the marriage. And, you know, you have to, I mean, you're right. Every marriage goes through tough times. I mean, regardless of how wonderful it is when you get together, which I'm sure, you know, when you're dating, you don't necessarily think about that. But inevitably, if you stay together 20 years, there were some not so great years in those 20 years.
Yeah.
So you're right. Most people that are, or not most people, but many that are dating that are older know this already because they've been around the block a bit, but no one's really prepared for it. So Dr. Fu, you're saying that keeping together a marriage is about dating. So what we can learn from Julie and her Cupid's coaching is that what you go for with a person originally, not necessarily all the obvious stuff, but learning that about that partner, being interested in them, is something we need to keep alive even 20 years later?
Well, I'm thinking as I'm listening to both your questions, which I really like, and Julie's responses, what I'm thinking is, you know, if I'd like to do a couples workshop where I had Julie as a guest speaker.
Great idea.
I'd like to say, listen, it's not about finding a mate, you have a mate. It's about finding the mate that you have that you don't know you have.
I love it.
That is great. That is great. But of course, you know, those who don't have a mate, you know, just would so wish they are in that position to find that mate. But that's a really great thought that I was just thinking. Those who are looking for someone and feel lonely, you can feel lonely in a marriage too. So would they be the same issues that you would find? I mean, would you look at what you're looking for someone in dating? Would you think of those top three things you want in someone and look at them in your marriage and see if you have them in your spouse?
Well, you got to be careful that you don't diagnose your spouse with that, right?
Uh-huh.
You got to be. My wife's name is Lynn, Julie, and I'd have to be careful to say, "Well, I was looking for someone who." And Lynn isn't that. Men are good diagnosticians, and it's a relationship killer. So
yeah,
what
I think there's a way to ask the question. So, for example, if a woman wants to have a man who's generous, a way to ask that question is, if you're 20 years into a marriage, in what ways is my husband generous?
Wonderful.
I love the
yes.
five love languages, and that book helped me understand that my husband, even though he's real tight with the cash, I mean seriously tight with the cash, that's how he keeps us safe. Mm. It's how he shows his love for us, is by not blowing money on stupid stuff. And guess what? We didn't lose our house, and a lot of people did, you know?
Yeah.
How is my husband generous? He makes me my egg white omelet every morning, and that is just so sweet that he does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, well
that's
said.
That's a beautiful, beautiful, well said response, Julie, because that's the kind of thing that we teach couples here is, you know, if you're curious, then you're not saying, well, my husband's cheap. You're saying what you're saying. You're saying, how is my husband generous? Not how isn't he generous,
mm-hmm.
but how is he loving? And I, you know, I've got plenty of stories there too, but I we don't have time. But of couples who, once they start that process, come in saying things like you just said. You know, I discovered I was focused on my husband not wanting to blow money on the blah blah, but he made us safe and we didn't lose our house. That's a very generous man.
That's right.
But it has to be seen that way.
That's right. And that's our role as educators and coaches, is to help shine light on the areas that have been dark and underappreciated.
Yeah.
Men, you guys are so simple, actually. You respond so well to appreciation and respect and a thank you. And what often is the problem with us girls is that we can be very critical and judgmental, and we can look for what's wrong and talk about what's wrong. And I think we have to discipline ourselves to see what's right and what's beautiful and what's lovely, whether it's in a date, the first date, or 20 years into a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a quick little story about a fight we've had, and it's very illuminating in this regard. What we have a lot of children and a lot of adult children, and Lynn and I would fight about the children coming over. She's the kind of woman that like them just to come on, drop in, you know, come on, we'll make dinner, da da da. I'm not that kind of guy. I like to know what's happening. And we spun around that issue for a long time until one day she heard me say something that she hadn't heard before or I hadn't said before. She heard me saying, I don't like children. I wish they wouldn't come over. That's not what I was saying. I was saying, I wish we had structure. And we have our family, because we're in second marriage here, we have a 14-year-old daughter, and I was saying, this family unit, I want to honor this family unit, and if those families just drop in, it feels chaotic to me, mm-hmm. and I need some order here and mm-hmm. some structure here. So it wasn't about my not loving the other children. It was about my honoring this family and wanting some time and intimacy with this family.
Yep.
And once we started to get the language right, she could honor what I was doing, and I could honor her generosity and wanting those children to, you know, to come over and so forth. We weren't nearly as far apart as we originally imagined.
And that's probably true in dating. So I think we've got about 1 minute left here. But I just want to say, you know, that dating and marriage are not that dissimilar. When I hear both of you talking, I hear the same thing in just in different ways, you know, the early part of it. But all of those things are equally important. Julie, before we go, give out your website for those who want to get in contact with you. And we do have it on Shannon's Corner. So if you're in the car, don't worry. Just go to Shannon's Corner. But it is...
It's cupidscoach.com, mm-hmm. CupidsCoach.com.
Okay, and anybody can go there. You don't have to live out in Los Angeles where you are.
As long as they're on this planet. If they're on Mars, I can't help them. But if they're on planet Earth and they speak English,
I know those guys that live on Mars.
Is good.
Yeah, okay.
Everybody should know that not only will it be on Shannon's website, but WTBQ, Shannon's Corner, but also www.marriageconversation.com
right.
will have this show posted on the site so you can re-listen to it if you want.
Perfect.
And we'll also have Julie's contact information on our website. So you won't lose contact if you want to refer somebody to Julie or you want to refer some adult you know. You can do that easily through either Shannon's Corner or through marriageconversation.com.
Okay, we do have to wrap it up. I thank you both today for listening, and I thank everybody for listening to Marriage Conversation here the first Thursday of each month from 12 noon to 1. I thank you, Dr. Stephen Frew and Julie Furman, and I thank you all for listening. Take care, and until next time, don't forget to make good marriage choices.
Your community radio station since 1969. From ABC News, I'm Aaron Katursky. A battle portrayed as between religious...